All right, everyone. Welcome back to another fun episode of Oi with the Terror. My name is Sandra.
And I'm Danielle.
And we are back. And it's almost Thanksgiving, which is crazy. So happy early Thanksgiving, everybody, I guess.
I don't know. I just saw my chiropractor yesterday or Friday. And I see her once a month. And as I was leaving, like, she was like, "Happy Thanksgiving." And I'm like, "Oh my God, it's yeah. this week.
It's this week." Just crazy. Only 3 days. I have 3 more days of work and then I'm on vacation. Well, 2.5 days.
Soon.
Yeah. So how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, so I don't think we've ever said this, but Sandra and I have been recording on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
So today is Sunday, so I guess I had a pretty good weekend. And last weekend, Sandra and I went to, what is it even called?
It's called
Bold Podcast Show.
Yeah, so the show is called Pod Meets World, and it's hosted by Daniel Fishel, who played Topanga, Ryder Strong, who played Sean, and Will Friedle, who played Eric. And I she was willing to go to the show. It was fun. I don't know. I had fun, although the fans were a little crazy, but that's kind of expected.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect because I've never been to, like, any kind of podcast show. Like, I've heard of them, mm-hmm. like, various podcasts. I wanted to go to, like, a few true crime murder ones, so mm-hmm. maybe I'll do that next. But yeah, like, I grew up with this show, like you, like anyone in their 30s, grew up pretty much watching Boy Meets World. So, like, I definitely knew about the show, but I'm not, like, a diehard fan of it or anything. But I was like, well, that's, like, sounds fun to do at least, mm-hmm. and a different activity. But so I had no expectations pretty much going into this. Like, I was like, are we just sitting there and they're going to, like, answer questions for 2 hours or, like, what's the format? I don't know. And it was a lot of fun. They had, like, entertaining segments and stuff like that. It wasn't just like a Q&A the whole time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the fans were, like, cray. Like, I don't know if it was a section we were sitting in, but, like, anytime there's any kind of reference or joke, like when the actors are talking about filming and, like, some jokey thing, mm-hmm. everyone around us would just, like, start, like, uproariously laughing, like the hardest laughter I've ever heard in my life. And I was just like, Sandra, what is happening? Why are they laughing right now? And so there was a lot of that.
Yeah, it was,
I guess it's, like, good, not like rowdy,
yeah,
I don't know, rambunctiousness, but.
But, like, and it's funny because I was talking to my mom about it and she's like, well, if, you know, you grew up with a show and this is, like, your dream to see, like, some of your these right. people that you also
watched
grow up.
You could tell they were really
up.
Into it. Yeah. They were, like, very dedicated fans.
Yeah. It was good. I thought they did really well. I liked how they had the different segments. I enjoyed
yeah.
the stories that they had. I liked how they had a costume contest, which it was another intense part of the show. Just because people were, like, yelling at them to look at different parts of the theater, mm-hmm. so they weren't just focused on, like, the part that they could see closer to them or something. But, I don't know. As a fan of the show, I really enjoyed it, but it's a little bit different because you and I were born, like, when the show started filming, so we're a little
okay,
bit more of,
yeah.
like, the younger... It started
yeah,
filming in
the middle end of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. We watched more, I think, of the reruns that were on Disney.
Right.
Whereas the other people that are a little bit older watched it on, I think it was on TGIF, so it was on, like, maybe ABC.
Oh, okay.
So, because it started filming in 1992, and we were born in 92.
Oh, got it.
So
that makes sense, because
yeah.
I've always been, like, I like the show, but I mm-hmm. never, like, fully got into it, so
yeah.
maybe that's why.
I think I got into it, too, because of my sister, because I have an older sister.
Yeah.
And so she would watch it, so, and I would want to, you know, bond with my sister and watch it
I
with
feel
her.
Like, it was kind of, like, the classic after-school show, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there'd always be reruns of
oh,
it
yeah.
around, like, 3 o'clock.
Yep, when you get home from school, because it was
right.
usually, like...
That's probably when I would watch.
I feel like around that time it was stuff like Boy Meets World, maybe Full House.
I didn't
definitely.
Realize, like, how long it was, too. Like, when they were showing us clips and, like, trivia and whatever, and then there was, like, they were talking about when Topanga got married, and I was like, oh my god, it went on for that long.
Seven
and then
seasons.
Their college years, and yeah.
Went on for seven seasons, because also, if you listen to the podcast, what they do is they do two episodes a week, Monday, Thursday. Monday, they have, like, a guest on, and they, like, talk about, like, it's a guest from the show or from production or one of their friends from another show from that same time. And then Thursdays is their recap episode, so they're rewatching the entire show together, and then they talk about the episode that they watched. And just hearing their reactions, you can tell that, like, it's been a while since they've watched it, because they're a little bit more like, makes more sense, or they're a little more confused.
I could tell, like, even with, like, some questions that the audience were throwing at them, like, one or two of them were like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even remember everything, because there was so much.
There's so much. It was so long ago for them. So rewatching them. Also having to rewatch yourself when you're like a teenager.
Yeah, that's so hard. I would not like that.
No, especially with like the 90s fashions and stuff. It's like, do you really want to do this for the next like 3 years? Because it's going to take them about 3 years to watch the whole series.
Yeah.
So.
It was fun to watch them, like, talking. Like, you could tell, like, they actually, like and respect each other. Like, they had good, like, bantering. So that was fun to see.
Yeah. All in all, I would give it a solid, like, 8 out of 10, I think.
I was going to say 8, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good, though. I enjoyed it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me, because I don't know if they're going to do another tour. So, for me, it was, like... Yeah, I'll do it, because I love this podcast, and I listen to it, and I grew up with it, so why not?
Right.
And our seats are actually pretty good.
Yeah, we could see them.
Regardless of the people around us, they were actually pretty good.
I know when that tall guy sat in front of me, I was like, no, but it was like, I think the way it was angled or whatever, I could still see.
Yeah.
So it was fine.
I just learned to look between people's heads where I'm like, yep, I can see this. This is fine.
Right.
Which is why I hate sitting on, like, the ground level, because I'm always like, I can't see. Like, there's always somebody tall
in
front of me.
And the way, like how they were all sitting on the couch on the stage, it was easy to see them, too. It's not like they were, like, moving around a lot or whatever. Yeah. So.
Like, here's an example of, like, I went to see Frozen on Broadway, like, 2 weeks ago. And I knew there were going to be tall adults, but I also knew there were going to be kids. So I was like, okay, maybe I have a chance. A tall grandmother sits in front of me. And I was like, are you kidding me? Next to her peanut-sized granddaughter. And I'm like, can't they switch? Can't you switch?
There aren't a lot of tall grandmas out there. They usually shrink. She must have been really tall when she was younger then.
Like, I think she was a younger grandmother, too. Also, I don't know if she was a grandmother. I'm assuming she was a grandmother. She's very nice, but it didn't matter anyway.
You got grandma vibes.
Well, also, like, halfway through the show, the kid got scared, so she sat in her lap. So I was like, okay, now I can see. Because
did she unwrap a hard candy for them?
No, but she gave them cotton candy, which I was like, that's a bold choice to give a 4-year-old cotton candy. That is a bold choice, ma'am.
Parents are gonna hate her. Yeah.
She's got to be the grandmother because, no, you don't give a kid cotton candy like halfway through a show.
Right. Although when she gives them back to the parents, at least there's going to be like the sugar crash and they'll be sleepy by then.
Yeah.
She'll have to deal with her during the sugar high.
Yeah, I did feel kind of bad because, like, you could tell that she got really scared. So I was like, yeah, maybe she's a little young for this, but also, like,
why was it like scary?
Some of the special effects that they did, you weren't, like, I jumped at some points because you're just not expecting them, obviously, the special effects. And, you know, like, if you think about it, Frozen is kind of dark because, like, the parents pass away and you actually see the parents
die. There's, like, dark magic or whatever.
There's dark magic, and it was during, I remember it was during the scene where Elsa was arrested, which, if you know the movie, you know it's coming, but then seeing it is kind of different.
Right, yeah.
I do think it's interesting, though, and I think I told you this when I saw you last week, when I was seeing the show, is Hans has, like, a song by himself, and nobody applauded for him after his song, and usually people, like, applaud. Very little people did, and then... nobody really gave him a standing ovation. So I'm like, I don't know if it's for the actor or for the character, but also, like, he did a good job. Like, he was very good. But nobody likes Hans. So
he's a he's the bad guy.
He's the bad guy that you don't see coming. So yeah, but if anybody is has Frozen coming to coming to their city or whatever, definitely recommend it. It's a really good show. They do a good job with it.
And there was that one show you said you do not recommend, and you hate it.
Lizzie Borden musical. Don't see it. Just don't see it. If you want to learn about Lizzie Borden, listen to our podcast episode. Don't see the show. I feel like
the only reason someone would create that is just for satire. Like, that does not make sense as a legitimate drama.
If it was satire. As a musical. I mean, if it was satire, it was satire, but no.
Because, like, I feel like they were probably trying to go in a Sweeney Todd type direction, but I don't think that would work with Lizzie Borden.
No, it doesn't.
That's hilarious. It doesn't.
But I do recommend, because I actually went to see the new Hunger Games movie. So I recommend seeing that. That was very well done. Very dark. Very, very dark.
I'm, like, very so behind well done. With, like, new movies that I didn't know that was a thing until, like yesterday when I was looking up movie showtimes near me. I was like, there's a new Hunger Games movie?
Well, I think it's because of the strike. They weren't allowed to do a lot of advertisements. And, like, the actors weren't doing their press tours like they normally do. Now they can because, luckily, the strike is over.
Got it.
Because that happened. Because there is a new Marvel movie that came out last weekend or the week before, I can't remember, and nobody really went to see it because nobody really knew it was out because they weren't able to do the advertising and the cast wasn't able to do their promotions for it. So
that makes sense.
There's a lot of people. When I saw the Hunger Games movie, like, it was a sold out theater and they had multiple shows at the same time,
so
it's good. It's long. I think it's about 2.5 hours, but I really liked it. There's a lot of nods to the other Hunger Games movies that they kind of snuck in there. But it was definitely, like, I had all of the emotions, like, shock, anger, crying, just because.
Is it supposed to be a after?
Like, it's a prequel. So it takes place during the 10th Hunger Games. So that's about 64 years before Hunger Games.
Oh, got it.
So, like, Katniss isn't there. Like, none of the other actors are there, but they do kind of nods to them in a way. Especially Katniss. But if you like The Hunger Games, also if you like the book, it's really close to the book from what I've heard. I didn't read the book, but everybody I've talked to who has read the book said it's, like, very, very true to the book. So definitely recommend. Okay, so just a heads up, mine's a little long this week as opposed to last week's, which was kind of short. But I am curious to see if you've heard of it. So for this week, because I've been watching a lot of Ghost Hunters, I decided to talk about the Leap Castle, which is in Ireland. It's in Coolderry or County Offaly, Ireland. I don't know if you've heard of it.
What is Leap Castle?
Leap Castle. L-E-A-P.
No. But they have so many castles.
They do. They have so many castles. But apparently, this castle describes itself as the world's most haunted castle. So, which is kind of, after doing the research, I can kind of understand why, but also, like, there are how many castles in the world?
Right.
A lot. And Ireland alone.
That's a bold claim.
Yeah.
It's almost like saying, like, the oldest pub in the world, or there are a few in Dublin that have said they're the oldest pub in Ireland.
Yep. So it's kind of one of those things. But
they look very old, so.
Yeah, and Scotland, I think, does, like, the same thing where they're like, but we're the oldest pub in the world. And it's like, are you? I don't know.
Just find it funny when you see multiple signs that say that, like, when you're in the same area. Like, and, then, and you know they're touristy ones, too. But
also,
there was one near where I lived in Dublin. But it was actually, like, pretty fun to go to. Like, I mean, we were tourists also.
Yeah. But also, like, some of them are, like, rivals with each other, too, which reason is hysterical for me.
Right.
Because we have that over here, too. If you go to, like, I know in Philly there's, like, two sandwich shops that say they have, like, the best, like, Philly cheesesteak and they're rivals, and they're always competing with each other. So it's, like, it's normal, but it's just, I mean,
they both profit off of the competition in a way. They're both, like, giving each other attention.
Yeah. And this castle does as well because you can go and tour it. They do offer tours. So you can go and check it out if anybody is interested or going to Ireland. So it does, like any other castle, I feel like in Ireland or any part of the world, it does have kind of a very brutal history. They aren't really sure when it was originally built, but they think, and they've kind of estimated that it's been built, or it was built in the early 1500s by the O'Bannon clan. And the O'Bannon clan were actually the secondary chieftains under the ruling of the O'Carroll clan. The current building is thought to have been built over an earlier castle. And before that, the site was actually used by the Druids for initiation ceremonies. And the castle has actually been home to a lot of bloodshed and violence over the centuries, which makes sense considering Ireland's history. It was originally named, and excuse my pronunciation, Liam U'Bannon, which means Leap of the O'Bannons. And legend has it that two of the O'Bannon brothers were contesting the chieftainship of their clan. But the only way to settle this argument was, I guess, by a display of strength and bravery. So they were both told to jump off of a rocky outcrop where the castle was to be built, and the survivor would win the honor of the right to chieftain. Thus, the castle was built and then fueled by blood and death. So even in the very beginning, it was kind of off not to a great start. Leap Castle was then used as a principal stronghold of the O'Carroll clan, and it was used to guard and pass through the Sleevebloom Mountains, and has been said that no castle was no more well fortified than Leap. The O'Carrolls were essentially known as a fierce and brutal people, bent on domination. They were also known for their ruthless tactics, often killing others and each other on the path to supremacy. The O'Carrolls had called Leap Castle their home until it was wrenched by their hands in 1642 by an English soldier of the Cromwellian forces by the name of John Darby. The castle has been subjected to a lot of remodeling and restoration over the years. Most of the remodeling had been done by the Darbys. The Darbys inhabited Leap Castle from 1642 until it was burned down in 1922. Unfortunately, Leap Castle was then the target of an uprising and was looted and burnt to an empty shell in 1922, where it lay dormant until it was purchased in 1974 by an Australian by the name of Peter Bartlett. This saw the awakening of the ancient building, and the work is now being continued by the current owners, who are called the Ryans. So just to give a little bit of the background of the different families, so the O'Carrolls family, again, they were a very fierce and brutal clan, and they were known to be particularly violent. John Carroll was thought to be the first Prince of Ely who lived at Leap Castle, and who was most likely responsible for the construction of the early sections of Leap Castle. John O'Carroll died at Leap Castle suffering from the plague. He was then succeeded by a son by the name of Mulroney O'Carroll. And then kind of throughout the years, it was passed down to different, I don't remember the name of the word, I guess different descendants of his. And then in 1629, John O'Carroll, the nephew of Charles O'Carroll, was given the official ownership of the Leap estate. Then in the year of 1649, the property of Leap Castle was handed over to the first of the Darby line by the name of Jonathan. He was at that time a soldier of the Cromwellian forces and was handed the property and land in lieu of pay. In 1664, the property handed back to John O'Carroll due to his continual loyalty of Charles I, and this arraignment was unfortunately reversed in 1667 due to the differing views of Charles II. Leap Castle was once again back in the hands of the Darby family. So the Darby family, Jonathan Darby II, he obtained it in 1649. And then he and his wife Deborah had a son also named Jonathan. And then once again, it was passed down to different members of the family. Jonathan Darby V maintained Leap Castle or the Leap Estate until his death in 1802. He didn't have any male children, and so Leap Castle was passed on to his younger brother, Henry. Henry, who was born in 1750, climbed through the naval ranks to become Admiral Sir Henry D'Estaire Darby in 1799. He then died in 1823. He also had no children of his own, so upon his death, the Leap Castle estate was inherited by his brother, John Darby. John Darby then was married, and he died in 1834. He was succeeded by his sons, William Henry, Christopher George, Susan Jonathan, Horatio D'Estaire, John Nelson, and Sarah Darby. So William inherited it until he died in 1880, and then his eldest son had died back in 1872. So it was passed to his grandson, Jonathan Charles Darby, and now I couldn't find a lot of information on the other families that owned it, but now it is owned by a different family. So if you do go to this castle, you hear about the different hauntings, and this is why it kind of claims to be the most haunted castle, because there are a total of about 7 hauntings. So the first one is, it mentions too, there's somebody, there's a governess, and then there's an old man. So the governess, or nanny, which most governesses are referred to now as nanny, is frequently seen in the main hall and is often seen with 2 girls, Emily and Charlotte. I'll get back to them a little bit later. It appears that visitors at Leap seem to have more interaction than the current owners. Guests have reported being touched or having someone brushing past them. And a friend of one of the Ryans by the name of Sean Ryan was having lunch at Leap Castle one day, and both him and another female guest were sitting near the fire and saw a proud lady in Victorian attire. I guess they saw her on the wall diagonally across the main hall, and after discussing what they both saw, their previous skeptical neighbor had changed his thoughts. They have also seen an old man. He's usually seen in numerous times sitting peacefully by the fire in the main hall. The other 2 ghosts that they see are 2 girls. They are referred to as Emily and Charlotte. They've been seen for a while. So Emily is thought to be around 11 or 12. Charlotte to be around the age of 6 or 7. They are mainly seen playing in the main hall and running up the stairwell. They are believed to have lived at the castle around the 1600s and are thought to be the last of the O'Carrolls, or the first of the Darbys. They were able to find that Emily died after falling from a castle's southeastern battlements. People outside the castle have also reported seeing a girl falling off the castle roof and disappearing before hitting the ground. There's also been sounds of child screaming or a child screaming and then suddenly being cut out, and that's been heard by numerous people in the castle. Charlotte has been seen with a deformed right leg that is almost totally turned backwards and drags backwards behind her, running after the older girl. Another haunting that they have is the priest house. So since the burning of Leap Castle in 1922, the priest house is still an empty shell. Most of the castle is still kind of empty because they are in the process of remodeling and doing a lot of restoration to it. So it's not uncommon to see parts of the castle that are empty or that are more of a shell, or described as more of a shell. And apparently with the priest hole, most of the accounts relates to the time of the Darbys. So people have seen shadowy forms wandering through the empty building. The Ryans and guests have also heard chanting that is coming from this area, and often when commented, it'll suddenly stop. There's also another haunting of the murder hold room. So it's also been referred to as the Muckle Hole Room, where various experiences have been reported at the time of the Darby's residence. Unfortunately, it's not known where the room was originally located. There are a few possibilities of where the location of this room is, either in the north or south wings, or the blue and red rooms, respectively. Theoretically, a murder hole in the traditional sense may have been situated in this area of the castle guarding the main entrance. The next one is the murdered woman. So this is where a woman has been seen and heard since the time of the Darby's residence, and she is believed to have been murdered by an O'Carroll. She has been described as having very few clothes and a red cloth cover over her face, where she screams loudly, she screams loudly twice and she disappears. Then there is the Red Lady. One of the spirits encountered from the time of the Darbys is known as the Red Lady. She's been described as a very tall woman clothed in a red dress. She's been seen carrying a dagger in her hand, raised in a menacing manner, and a strange luminescence is seen radiating within her. People encountering this spirit have also commented on the immense cold that fills the room and permeating into their heart. It is thought that the woman was captured by an O'Carroll and subsequently essayed, and the baby born as a result was then killed by the O'Carroll, reasoning that they could not afford to feed the child. Distraught, the woman then killed herself with the same blade. The next one is the Bloody Chapel. The Bloody Chapel is home to many of the spirits of Leap Castle. People passing the castle at night have even reported a bright light streaming out of the upper windows. This occurrence has been reported since the time of the Darbys, when the castle was left a burnt-out shell back in 1922. This event was reported by passersby, and even now neighbors have telephoned the Ryans and informed them of the chapel's illumination. There have also been strange smells of rubber that have been reported during people's visit to the upper hall. And one of the most well-known and referred to as the O'Carroll priest. After the death of Mulrooney O'Carroll back in 1532, there was a fierce power struggle that was developed within the remaining O'Carroll family. Essentially, brother fought against brother to try to gain the chiefmanship. And legend has it that an O'Carroll murdered his brother, a priest, while performing mass in the upper hall of the castle. It is also believed that the priest started the mass before the arrival of his brother, and this was considered to be a great insult. This apparently angered the O'Carroll, that flew into a rage and slaughtered his brother where he stood. The priest has been seen on many occasions in the bloody chapel, and the spirit has also been seen lurking on the stairway below and also leaving the chapel via the western door to the bartizan and down the northern stairs. And then the next one is the, forgive my pronunciation, the Aubierlet, which is one of the more sinister features of the Bloody Chapel. It is a small chamber that is located in the northeastern corner of the chapel, and it is thought that the original use for these chambers was to store valuables. They were also used as a place to hide in the event of siege. The O'Carrolls, however, used this chamber for a far more sinister purpose. They modified this chamber to serve as a small dungeon where prisoners were thrown in dead or dying, and the entrance to the chamber is a long, narrow hole originally fitted with the form of a trap door, and the named is derived from the French word to forget.
That's creepy.
It's very creepy. A lot of this castle is really creepy. During the occupation of Leap Castle by the Darbys, the Opulet was cleaned of its contents and removed during some of the renovations carried out. It is said that 3 cartloads of skeletons were removed from there during this period, and some believe since the gruesome discovery, an emotional shockwave was sent through the castle, and that many of the spirits, including the elemental, were woken from their dormancy. Sean Ryan speaks of a man who seems to live in the Obulet. He leaves the Bloody Chapel on occasion, and he'll wander down the lower levels of the castle. So those are all of the different hauntings. This castle actually has been featured in a lot of pop culture, which I was kind of surprised by. I was aware of the Ghost Hunters episode because I watched it. However, I was not aware that it has also been featured on Scariest Places on Earth, Living TV's Most Haunted in its first season, The Atlantic Paranormal Society, or TAPS, from Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters. Back in August of 2014, Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures filmed their 10th season Halloween special at the castle, most recently by Paranormal Investigations on YouTube channel called Sam and Colby. The claims of paranormal activity include the putative existence of the Red Lady and the ghosts of 2 girls and an element spirit associated with Mildred Darby. The castle has also been featured on the cover of several editions of The Riders by Tim Wimpton. And back in 1996, Leap Castle's history and hauntings were also examined in Castle Ghost of Ireland by Robert Hardy. It also was the focus of episode 51 of the popular How Haunted podcast, and a chapter in The Word of Lore, Dreadful Places by Aaron Mankey is also dedicated to Leap Castle. It is titled The Tainted Well in reference to the castle's gruesome opulet. That's also been featured in the podcast Lore, and that is episode 68 entitled The Tainted Well. So there you go. Leap Castle in Ireland.
Nice. A lot. Mm-hmm. Wait, so how old is it again?
So they believe it was built back in the 1500s. So it's about, I don't know, like 500.
It's pretty old.
No, but it's old, and it's definitely got a lot of history. And just watching the Ghost Hunters episode, from what I remember, a lot of weird and creepy stuff happened to them that they were like, we don't know, we can't explain this, we're not sure. So I thought it was kind of like just interesting, and I've never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. So I thought it would kind of be fun to like research.
Irish history is also fun.
I haven't done international topics in a while.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's interesting because, like, the different learning about, like, the different clans and, like, mm-hmm. how it's kind of been, like, passed on, but also, like, it burned down at one point. So they had to, like, kind of rebuild it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, remodeling. If you know with the paranormal, if you remodel, you're going to disturb stuff.
Yeah, it's probably so much work to remodel a castle. Oh, my God. And expensive. Yeah,
you got to bring in. Well, you also have to bring it up to code. So you got to, like, bring in electrical. You got to bring in, like, plumbing.
Yeah.
Like, that's not easy. Like, you don't want this poor family living in a castle where they're like, well, we can live here, like, during the day, but, like, we don't have internet, we don't have electrical, and we don't have plumbing.
I have seen, like, you could stay at, like, you could spend the night, like, their hotels mm-hmm. almost at some castles in Ireland, and that always seemed, like, fun.
I feel like, for me, I would enjoy it, but I'd also just be terrified the entire time.
Right. Like, you said that this castle is open, like, as a museum or whatever?
You can yep, they do tours. It's open to tourists. So you can definitely go and kind of look and get a tour. I don't think it's open to overnight. It didn't clarify on their website. Because I think Ghost Hunters went back there in, like, I want to say, like, 2015, 2014.
I bet it's, like, some rich person rents mm-hmm. it out, like, every year for one night. And just, like, has a sleepover. I mean, like the Lizzie Borden house.
I mean, it'd be interesting.
Probably, like, on All Hallows Eve or something.
I like how you're thinking of Halloween, and I'm thinking of, like, well, it'd be a cool place to have, like, a Christmas party or, like, a holiday party.
Yeah, I was going in the more spooky route, I guess.
I just probably have a holiday on the brain right now, so. Mm. But no, I thought it was definitely interesting. I liked the history. Again, just learning about, like, the different clans. And I liked how it was, like, this clan was very brutal. And it's, like, weren't all clans, like, super brutal back then?
Yeah, they didn't have a choice. Yeah, they had to. Like, they had to
They be. Had to, like, mm-hmm. I don't know what's the word, stand by for their clan and their property. So,
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's a little taste of Ireland. I haven't done something from Ireland in a while either, so I thought it would mm-hmm. be interesting.
Yeah, international mm-hmm. ghosts.
And it's a red lady this time. It's not a white lady, and it's not a blue lady.
Yeah, you don't hear about her very often. It's usually the white one, not the red one.
So I just want to point out, we have a third color now. It's red.
That sounds like the scariest color mm-hmm. to see for a ghost.
Can you imagine a ghost, like, holding, like, a bloody knife? No. I think I'd rather take the white lady or a blue lady than the red lady.
Yeah, they shouldn't be allowed mm-hmm. props. That's too much. Should I get into mine?
Yes, I'm curious, because we did not send each other hints. I don't think we looked at that, so.
Yeah, I've been forgetting about that. I guess we could start it back up, but.
But also,
we don't have a great visual aspect for this podcast anyway.
No, but also mine is, like, it would have said, like, castle, and you would have been like, great. Where?
Yes. Castle Ireland. Even if you send me a photo of a castle, I'd be like, that's definitely that one that you did.
I don't know.
I have a puzzle of a castle. I think it's in Scotland, though. And it was, like, the most annoying puzzle ever. I was like, that's fun. A jigsaw puzzle. It's either 500 or 1,000 pieces. And I was like, that's not going to be that hard. And it was literally the hardest one. It was mainly just, like, gray colors and, like, light blue colors. And it was, like, the bane of my existence.
So are you a puzzle fan or not really?
Yeah, kind of picked it up during COVID, and Yeah, it's like, I feel like it's more of like a winter cool weather activity, I would say. Mm-hmm. Like, don't really do them as much in the summer or whatever. But also, like, I do it in the living room. And if I don't finish that puzzle in a week, it's kind of a pain. But now we have a puzzle board.
Okay.
So the puzzle board is now a pain to move, but at least it, like, is portable. So that's been a game changer. I actually think we did a puzzle, like, 6 months ago, and it's still on the puzzle board, not finished. And it might be a castle. And I, like, told myself, like, we put it in the dining room, and I was like, told myself we finished the puzzle, and then I found it a few weeks ago in the dining room, and I was like, God damn it, and we didn't finish it.
It's haunting you. It's mocking you.
I just, like blacked that out and had convinced myself we finished it. But now I'm like, do I destroy it or just try to go finish it and probably go crazy?
I mean, who knows? The last puzzle I tried to do, because I'm not a puzzle person, but a friend of mine and I were like, we should try it. We were missing a piece.
Oh,
we finished most of it, and it was missing a piece. So we just decided to throw it away.
I don't recommend castle puzzles. No. They're, like, the hardest.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
It's like you said, it's all shades of gray.
Right.
And blue. And green.
There are fun ones. I like when you get, like, puzzles of, like, famous art or something like that. Like, colorful, decorative ones. Like,
okay.
I wouldn't, like, go for a landscape first. And then there are, like, fun reference puzzles, like, from shows and movies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a, like, broad spectrum for types of puzzles.
Yeah. I think puzzles, especially during COVID, got, like, super popular again. So now there's so many puzzles.
Everyone was, like, showing off on Instagram with, like, the amount of puzzles they were finishing.
Well, it's also, like, I think they're, like, a friend of a friend, but they'll do a puzzle and then they'll glue it so they can, like, keep it.
There's that level. Yep. And then you, like, hang it on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'll ever do that.
I don't think so.
But that would help with the amount of puzzle boxes we currently have, which is crazy. So that is an option, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I could see how it'd be worth it if there's, like, a lot of pieces and you never want to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen some on Instagram where they're, like, 400,000 pieces, and I'm like, how?
No, that's too much. Like, I cut it off at 1,000, maybe 1,500, depending on what it is. But, like, 1,000 is usually the limit for me.
Mm-hmm.
We finished this giant puzzle at my parents' house, and it took us a few trips going back and forth to Connecticut to finish it. And I think it's currently still on this, like, fold-out table in their living room. And I think my mom was like, oh, we could glue it, and it took you guys so long to finish. And I was like, no, Mom, you don't. You can just, like, destroy that. And I think last time we were there a month ago, it was still on the table.
Like, unfinished? Or did you guys at least
finish it? No, it's finished now. It's finished. So I think my mom is just, like, so proud of us for finally doing it. But I'm like, so, like, when you have people over at the house and they're in the living room, this, like, table with the puzzle is always, like, on display, apparently.
Oh, so, she's so proud. She's so proud. Such a proud mama.
I don't know.
I feel like my mom would have been like,
my daughter finished this puzzle. She's 31 years old. Like, what a great accomplishment. Like, it's like, oh, that's great. Is she 8? Like, no.
No.
She's a grown woman.
But she managed, did.
With the help of her husband, who's also, oh no, is now 32. So that's just,
well,
that's how good it is right now.
I don't know. She be careful. She might sign you up for a puzzle contest, because apparently those are a thing. Like, who can solve? It is, though. It's who can solve a puzzle, like, faster. Right. And they have all these competitions.
Like, a puzzle con. There are all these cons now. There has to be puzzle con or, like, jigsaw con.
I'm sure. I know there's competitions. I'm sure there's a con out there everybody. I didn't know they were a thing until, like, I was on Instagram and I follow this, like, woman and she does these puzzles and that's, like, she does, like, right. all these giant ones and she participates in these contests.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's, like, something that I think any group of people can agree on is, like, a love for jigsaw puzzles. It's, like, a universal, like, solidifier thing. Like, you have to find one person in every group that mm-hmm. has a thing for jigsaw puzzles.
Yep, I am not that person. I can do up to, like, maybe a 100-piece puzzle on my, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I feel like there's a point where it's, like, okay, this is, like, helping my stress.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, castle puzzle made me even more stressed. So there's, like, different kinds of puzzles. Like, you can get, like, a, like, not intense, colorful one. Mm-hmm. And I would do that if I was feeling more stressed.
Yeah.
But then it's, like, if you want, like, to prove something to yourself, you do a castle puzzle. And then you go through, like, all the waves of, like, anxiety, basically. And it's a weird, like, mind game.
Mm-hmm. It is. It also, I get too competitive with myself. And then I'm like, nope, you right. need to finish this.
Oh my
God. You started it, you need to finish it.
I have a love-hate thing with puzzles, probably, mm-hmm. at this point. But yeah. I always go back to them.
Well, I'll keep a note in my brain. Do not get you a castle puzzle.
No, okay. We do not need any more. Because at a, like, we also had a period where we would, like, go to, like, small country stores when mm-hmm. we were driving around, like, New Hampshire, Mass. And we would, like, look for this certain brand of jigsaw puzzles. I think it was, like, White Mountain. And for whatever reason, we, like, kind of started collecting them a little. We're like, oh my god, it's like a Picture of a Charming General store in New England, like, perfect puzzle. And so now we have like 6 or 7 like puzzles, like White Mountain.
So
we don't need any more.
Theoretically though, how mad would you and Dave be if I got you, like, because now you can do personalized puzzles. So you can upload a picture of, like, your cat.
I thought about doing that. I almost did that with, like, a photo of Tim as, like, a gift to Dave, like, for his birthday or, like, Christmas or whatever. I was so close to doing that. But then I was like, I know he's not. He'll maybe, like, do it once. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to have to, like, remind him that it exists in, like, a year. Like, I would get more out of it than I think he would, basically.
Okay.
But, so like, that's a funny idea.
I mean, it is kind of like a funny idea, depending on the photo that you use. Because I've thought about that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, friends of mine that, like, they have dogs, or, like, my stepmom, like, a puzzle, a good, like, her, like, family.
Photo, like, of them looking ridiculous.
Yeah.
I almost got, like, a pair of socks for Dave with Tim's face on them. Like, that was, I think I was on Shutterfly or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was between the socks and the puzzle, but then I ended up getting something else. I can't remember. But that does seem like a funny gift, even for, like, a bachelorette party or whatever. Like, socks with faces.
Mm-hmm. You can do anything with the face now. You can do, like, pajama pants, sweatshirt, mug, underwear.
I don't get the underwear one. No. But I guess it's fun.
It's funny if you have that type of, like, relationship with your friends or your spouse.
Yeah, to me that's, like, a, like, significant other type gift for some reason. Like, ooh.
So
scandalous.
Funny quick story, and then you can get on with your topic.
Yeah.
I was talking to my dad this morning, and he was asking me what I wanted for Christmas. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't really need much, like, maybe a pair of sneakers. And he's like, okay, like, so no toilet paper. And I was like, well, if you want to get it monogrammed, sure. And he just, like, cracked up. So now I feel like I might be getting, like, a gag gift of monogrammed toilet paper from my dad.
Does your dad usually get you toilet paper as a gift?
No.
Like, how did this, like, come to his mind when he was listing off options?
It's just something that, like, if you know my dad, you're like, that makes sense. Because he was, like, toilet paper, like, as a few other things. And I was like, no. He also every year he starts out with, what do you want for Christmas? I know you already have your 2 front teeth, but, like, what do you want for Christmas? Because it's a song.
Dad.
Like, all I want for Christmas. Yeah. It's from the song, like, all I want for Christmas is my 2 front teeth. And it's usually,
like, his shtick. dick.
It's okay. One of many with my dad.
I didn't know that about your dad. That's funny.
There are so many with my dad, but yes. And that's why I was like, well, if you want to get me like monogram toilet paper, you know, you can.
Well, let me know. Put it
on Instagram.
If
he gets me, if he gets me monogram toilet paper,
put it like as a story or whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very much my dad. For those of you listening that know my dad, so yeah. I'll let you know if I get that for Christmas.
If my parents ask me what I want, I'm just saying money. Like, yeah. I'm like, please don't give me sweaters or fuzzy socks. Like, if you get me clothes, make it fancy, and I could sell it on Poshmark, mm-hmm. I just need money. Like, yeah. I'm an adult.
Yep. It's the same where I was like, well, a nice pair of running shoes, because the running shoes I like are expensive. So, but
yeah.
That's
sell those on Poshmark.
No, I'm wearing them. yeah.
Okay.
But that was a fun conversation. Like, how it just veered off really.
I feel like we went on so many tangents.
All because of castles.
Right. But we were like on the same wavelength, which was nice.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. You're going to have to edit this.
I'm like trying to find a good segue for my topic and I can't. So I'll just get into it.
Yeah, just get into
There's
it.
There's no seamless segue with that. So my topic involves Ashton Kutcher. So that's fun. I never thought I would be mentioning him, but here we are. So unsurprisingly, it does also have to do with the early 2000s, which is, I think, prime time for Ashton Kutcher. Like, that was around the time he started Punk'd and he was in That 70s Show. And was in a bunch of, like, rom-coms. And had a relationship with Brittany Murphy, which is pretty iconic at that time. So...
Can I just say, I think I know what this is. I don't remember what it's called.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I know.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to mention this, like... I heard about this a little while ago, but it's been popping up more recently in the news because there was a recent like testimony that he gave. So yeah, it is pretty interesting, and it definitely got a lot more attention because Ashton Kutcher was involved with it. So I think that's good for like the victims, because the fact that Ashton Kutcher was able to testify, the killer did get, like, put away, basically. So that, like, celebrity or public, like, acknowledgement or whatever definitely helps with, like, crime, which is interesting. I guess a good thing and a bad thing. It, like, makes that much of an impact in the judicial system. So basically anyone in their 30s should know Ashton Kutcher. He was really big in the early 2000s. So on the evening of February 21st, 2001, he arrived at the home of 22-year-old Ashley Ellerin to pick her up for a date. But when he arrived there, no one answered. And after waiting for a little bit, he just like left because he just assumed she was tired of waiting for him because he had been running late. So there are a lot of crazy things about this story that it's like right time, right place / wrong time, wrong place type thing. That's just like crazy when you hear the time windows of things. So while Ashton was there waiting for Ashley, he peered in a window in her apartment and saw what looked like a large red wine stain on the carpet. And he was like, oh, there was a crazy party a few days earlier at this apartment, so it has to be, like, someone spilled red wine. And then he, like, didn't think much of it, and when no one answered the door, he basically just left. So it wasn't until the next day that he heard the news that she was actually murdered. The next day, Ashley's roommate arrived at their apartment and found her body on the floor near the bathroom. She had been stabbed 47 times, and the killer wouldn't face justice until 2019, almost two decades since the crime. The killer was her neighbor, Michael Gargiello, aka the Hollywood Ripper or the Boy Next Door Killer. Ashley Ellerin was born on July 16, 1978 in New Jersey. Her family moved to California, and she became known as the new girl to her classmates. But it seemed like that this didn't affect her confidence. She was known as like the fun-loving, bubbly personality type. So later in 2000, Ashley was an aspiring fashion designer in California while working at a local strip club. She was known to party a lot and partook in various party drugs. It was at one friend's birthday party where she met Ashton Kutcher. He was dating someone else at the time, and he introduced Ashley to one of his friends, but neither relationship lasted, and when they found themselves single at the same time, they made a plan to attend a post-Grammys party together. And that leads to February 21st, 2001. Ashton called Ashley several times throughout that night to let her know that he was running late. He said the last time they spoke was 8:24 p.m. And he called again later around 10 p.m. to let her know he was on his way, but no one answered. He arrived at her house in Hollywood around 45 minutes later, and that's where he found the door locked with no one answering. He said, quote, "I knocked on the door, there was no answer, knocked again, and once again, no answer. At this point, I pretty well assumed she had left for the night and that I was late and that she was upset," end quote. He assumed she was fed up with waiting and made other plans, so he decided to leave. The next morning, Ashley's roommate, Jennifer DeSisto, returned home to find Ashley lying near the bathroom floor. At first, she thought that it was some kind of practical joke. She said that there was so much blood that Ashley's hair was matted to the carpet, and that must have been the stain that Kutcher saw that he said he thought was a red wine spill. It wasn't until 2008 when Michael Gargiulo was arrested after he violently attacked his neighbor, Michelle Murphy. So in 2008, detectives connected him to the deaths of three women, including Ashley Ellerin. He became known as the Chiller Killer, the Hollywood Ripper, and the Boy Next Door. His MO was choosing victims who he lived near, and he initially stalked them and then attacked them in their homes. He first spotted Ashley when she was trying to fix a flat tire in front of her house. He used this as an opportunity to insert himself into her life. He offered to help her change the tire and then would frequently appear at her apartment to help with other repairs. Ashley's roommate actually became alarmed at the amount of times he was visiting, and she did think he was stalking Ashley. But Ashley was known to always see the good in people and just thought that he was another friend in her life. Detective Tom Small, who worked on the Ashley Ellerin case, noted, quote, "Probably someone came to the door and the rest is history. She knew the guy, and according to the people who knew her, if she knew you, she would let you in," end quote. Gargiulo's true motive for killing Ashley is unclear. He must have known she was alone on the night of February 21st, because as I mentioned, there was basically a two-hour time window. Ashton Kutcher called her at 8, around 8, and then when he called again at 10, there was no answer. So basically within from 8 to 10, and then he arrived at her house at 10:40. And no one answered. So to me, that's just insane. So it says his motive is unclear. He must have known she was alone on the night of February 21st. Perhaps he felt jilted by her or simply had the desire to kill her. He stabbed her 47 times and the wounds were so intense she was nearly decapitated. His first murder occurred in 1993. 4 years later, he attacked his neighbor Maria Bruno in her home and stabbed her to death. And then in 2008, he attacked Murphy in her Santa Monica apartment, but she fought him off and he ran away, leaving a bloody trail behind.
Is that Brittany Murphy?
No, yeah. Michelle Murphy.
Oh, okay.
After years of delayed trials, Gargiulo was found guilty of Ellerin's murder in August 2019 and sentenced to death, largely thanks to the testimony of none other than Ashton Kutcher. So, yeah, people may have been seeing this, like, in the news more recently because it just garnered so much attention because Ashton Kutcher somehow, like, got tied into all this, which is crazy.
Poor guy. To be like, I have to go and testify for a murder that happened in
I feel like 2000s. I remember seeing, like, a headline at some point that almost made it sound like he, like, a negative thing about him. Like, Oh, maybe he was involved with it or he did something. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
like,
I do.
I swear I saw some news about that and I was like, wow, they're pointing, like, the finger at Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, and people were mad because they're like, you need to reword your article. Like, he had nothing to do with this. He just testified.
Yeah, that's basically slander if you're saying that without any evidence. Like, yeah. That's bad reporting.
But also, it's kind of crazy that this guy committed more murders and...
Right.
Like, didn't really get caught until 2008.
If Ashton Kutcher wasn't, like, attached to this, he maybe wouldn't have had as intense... Mm-hmm. sentencing, or maybe would have gotten, like, released.
Mm-hmm.
He was only arrested after he probably tried to kill another person, but she was able to fight him off. Like, he had already gotten away with two murders or three murders before. Yeah,
that's just sad. Like, it's just, it's also really creepy to think about that, like, your neighbor.
Yeah. And the guy who's apparently like, I'll fix things in your apartment.
Yeah, because you're not going to think about it. You're going to be like, okay, he's going to come over, fix it, and
that's
leave.
Like the creepiest way, like, to literally, like, form a connection with someone. That's so, like, it takes so much, like, thought to act that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I also heard somewhere, because I watched a 2020 on Thursday. And somebody in the interview said, like, you're not really considered a serial killer until you kill, like, three people. Or, like, three people or more. So it's interesting that he did kill.
Yeah.
Or he killed two and he tried to kill a
third. The fact that he definitely had, like, a type two, I think that's another, like, attribute of being a serial killer is, like, having a specific, like, type of person you go after. And it seemed like he went for... women, like, the most, like, vulnerable kind, like, women by themselves in their homes. Like, he has some kind of thing about women, it sounds like.
And I also feel bad for the roommate, too, because imagine being like, well, right. If I was there, would it have still happened? Would I have also gotten, you know?
I know, isn't that crazy? Yeah, that's why they were like, he must have known she'd be alone. But the fact that, like, did he know he had that much of a time window? Mm-hmm. Like, because Ashton Kutcher, like, was supposed to be there earlier, but wasn't because he was running late. So how would this guy have known all that? Yeah. Like, maybe he was talking to her while she was getting ready. If he was, like, that much of a creep, he could have been like, what are you doing? Like, how did he know it's that perfect time window?
Maybe. Well, I mean, we all have patterns. So if you watch somebody for a certain amount of time, you learn, their pattern.
But, like, if Ashton Kutcher wasn't running late, like, would that have messed up everything? Like,
Might have. It might not have. He might have moved on to somebody else, or he might have killed her later.
Or just waited another day or something. If he was that involved with the stalking part, like, he probably would have just waited for another opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
So many things could have changed. The outcome, but, like, little things, too.
You know. That's, like, the show You on Netflix. Mm-hmm. It's, like, how many different small variables are there, like, for him to be able to get away with all that stuff.
It's so creepy.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's the Hollywood Ripper. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Oi with the Terror. We release new episodes every 2 weeks on Thursday. You can find us on Spotify and everywhere else you listen to podcasts. And follow and like our posts on Facebook and Instagram. And if you have any topic suggestions, feel free to email us at oiwiththeterroralready@gmail.com.
And happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you all next time.
Bye.